Welcome to Day Zero Update for April 23rd, 2023. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Jenner Victoria.
And yeah, we've got a busy week this week. Lots of new and interesting games to play and talk about, as well as a bunch of news here. We got some subscription services getting new stuff here. We got some releases getting dated. We got a lot of acquisitions and people moving around and stuff like that, as well as a Nintendo Indie World Showcase.
Yeah,
that's had a bunch of stuff on there.
Oh yeah,
that we can talk about, but not the one thing that every direct people whine about.
Yeah,
wanting in there, so we'll talk about that at the end of the show. But before we get to that, we'll talk about what we've been playing here. And yeah, I'll kick it off here with the stuff I've been playing. First up, there's Minecraft Legends, one of the new Game Pass releases that comes from, I forget, it's not Mojang, though on the Game Pass app on PC, they tie up all those Minecraft games in a way that's real weird. So you can kind of access them all from the same listing. And the way that just kind of gets a little confusing. But this is a game that I guess you could describe it as like an action RTS. You are kind of controlling a hero going around on this sort of Minecraft style map that has a bunch of biomes on it as you're running around. The story thing is that the piglins from the Netherworld are, you know, flooding into the world. That into the overworld, I guess is what they call it, you know, corrupting the world and setting the stage for the top Netherworld bosses to invade and do their thing to destroy the overworld. There's like three characters that sort of do a lot of the lore stuff. They're a bit weird. The story stuff all is weird in this game. As they kind of do a lot of narration as you're doing stuff, but the game itself, it's okay for me. I was kind of in the mood for a little bit of you know, RTS stuff, but I played on PC with a mouse and keyboard, and it felt very clumsy, the controls for all that, because you're not only, you know, managing a smallish crew, it's like 20 max. Maybe it gets bigger as you go into the game, but I basically did the first big mission of sorts to where to the point where it opens up. It kind of gets to be like an open world RTS. I don't know how that works. But once I beat that mission, it kind of goes to like a more peaceful state. And they're like, oh, there's more of these like towers to go take out. And I open up the map and it's like, oh, I guess there's just stuff here I go and do. It's not like bespoke missions you take on.
Oh, yeah.
Or anything, as far as I could tell, was just a little bit weird to that. But yeah, like you're going to these different areas and the setting up these like spawn points for the golems you could use. This is like the early stuff. This game doesn't really do a great job with tutorializing all this stuff. They kind of throw a lot at you and then just expect you to figure it out as you go. So you sort of set these like spawn points, and it's also a place where you can, if your crew gets, you know, mixed up and out of sorts, because it's really easy to lose them, because there's no, even though you only have 20 characters, there's no like, you know, bring all my people to me kind of thing, like Halo Wars does, you know, with the famous button where they just yell out all units and brings all your units to you in your control. You kind of just hit the Q button and all the characters that are, you know, in somewhat close to you kind of come together. Even like wildlife that are just happen to be around. You can kind of do that. Then you hit the E button to send them out forward at some indeterminate point to take out, you know, towers and whatnot around them. But yeah, once I got to the full four assortment of golems I could use, like one kind of can heal others. There's like a range unit. There's one that just fights, you know, up close. I don't know what the third one did. That again, they just throw two of Machu, and so I just had a bunch of them in a group, and I couldn't figure out what the other one did. Anyway, yeah, it feels like that. Like it's there could have been better mission design or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
It just felt it actually feels like an early access game, really.
Yeah.
Especially because I was streaming this and I could get the game reliably to crash in the loading screen for the campaign. Because in that process, it would freeze intermittently throughout the attempt to load. So you wouldn't actually see the bar like fill up slowly. It would get like 10% in, then stop. And if I clicked it, it would bring up the dialogue like, oh, this thing's having problems. You want to close it or you want to wait? And if I, just clicked it while I was doing that, it would just crash right there every time. Then I realized, you just need to stop touching anything for like 30 seconds at least, as it just kind of freezes and unfreezes and loads very weirdly in a way that just does that. That loading screen also has a bunch of like stock images of biomes in Minecraft that it shows you. And those all fade to black and then to the next image. It doesn't have like a smooth transition to it. And like in the game, in the campaign itself, all the cutscenes transitioned into and out of in very clunky ways that I was just like, is this really like a fully released game? It's not $60. It's $40.
Yeah.
For the game, you can pay more if you want for a deluxe edition that I assume includes some deluxe skins or whatever, because if you go to the main menus, they have a Minecraft storefront style thing where you can use coins to buy skins, and of course they sell the coins in odd amounts that the skins don't always cost evenly for that. And I'm wondering if it's the same exact currency from Minecraft proper, if they're you buy coins for Minecraft, if they transfer over. I don't have any expectations that's actually how it works, but the interface is pretty similar.
Yeah.
And they do have like a time limited mode of like a little mini campaign that you can play through for special cosmetics, that kind of thing if you're really into it. It's just a game that did not feel great at any point with a mouse and keyboard. You use your WASD to control. You directly control your hero, and they can jump around. You can get on different mounts. You start with the horse. But I could get like a beetle that could climb up walls more easily. And by climb up walls, I mean in the Minecraft sense where the beetle model stays the same, but it just kind of moves upwards, up hills in a very kind of clumsy way. There's also a bird that has like a bigger jump and has a better like glide to it. The beetle can glide as well. I think there's a tiger is the other one. You just run into them in the world. You kind of take, you just switch to them and you get the whatever abilities they have for them. And every time you did that, it swaps back to a cutscene to introduce this creature to you. Instead of just having like a pop-up saying like, yo, these things can jump and, glide. So that was always a weird thing when I found them. You do have to harvest resources. And I mean, if you're on the right part of the menu for the mining, you basically put this like marker out around an area where hopefully there are some of these items, these materials. Like you start off with wood and stone initially, and like as you play more, you get the ability to upgrade to more and more resources. And I guess you can do more crafting to it, and like that's kind of an all right thing. But there was like one of the missions where it's like, oh, there's going to be piglins coming into this village from any direction. So I set up these arrow towers in like, basically like four cardinal directions. And they only came from two directions. It was like west and north. And I was like, well, what was the fucking point of this if they're only coming from two ways instead of the way the game was telling me? Like, oh, they could come from anywhere. And the game was pretty easy. So I don't think there's any difficulty to it, I don't think. It just felt like a game where maybe I'll play a little more with the controller and see how that works, which then required me to learn how it works on a controller. But they have, accessibility stuff you would expect in this game. especially for control stuff. But nothing that really made it better for the ways I was playing it. So I don't know. It just feels like a game that's never really got over the hump of being an interesting idea to, you know, a finished good product. So I'm going to guess this is going to not do super well for them outside of the core Minecraft audience that will try anything that says Minecraft on it. But yeah, I was not really enthused on that. But yeah, let's see what else came out this week. Advance Wars 1+2 Reboot Camp. I forget what the full name of that game is, but is basically a repackaging of the first two games on the GBA in a $60 package that they basically redone all the visuals to be a bit more like a toy kind of look to them. Like simple CG kind of look to all the vehicles and troops and all that. I played mostly like the first like 5 or 6 missions in the game, so not too much. But the weird thing they do is they ask you when you start, like, oh, are you have you played Advance Wars before, or are you you know, new to the whole thing? And if you say you have played it, they still put you through all the tutorials. They're just like, you might pick something new up that you might not have realized. And I was like, okay, that's weird that you can't just like skip them. But I played through them. It was fine. But they're, you know, the tutorial missions are very scripted. Don't let you have anything different that you can do. So
yeah,
it felt like a question of like, just for our sake, have you played this before? And we don't care either way.
Yeah,
we'll let you feel like you got a choice, which is weird because they do have difficulties for the campaigns. There's like a casual and a classic difficulty. So I'm assuming casual is easier and classic is the original difficulty. I played on the classic difficulty because, again, the early parts of it are not really a challenge. There's one that was a bit challenging, but it was more of just a test of, you know, who could last the longest. But yeah, the campaign stuff, they do have some voice acting in this, but not much. It's a lot of times you'll see like a few lines for a character and they only voice the first line kind of thing. So, but I think this collection is reminding people that one of the main COs in your core group is a child who is an idiot, Andy, who at certain points is like, wait, what's an airport? And you're like, you're in charge of an army and you don't know what an airport is. And he says other stupid things. I'm sure these are all lines from the original games and all that, but I was like, man, you couldn't like just punch us up a little bit and make him not seem like a complete idiot. Especially because he's the first one you play as outside of Nell, who does all your tutorial stuff. And you know, she's pretty competent. But yeah, I'm at the point where I think I'm pushing the blue army back. I forget what they're called. I don't have all those names down pat just yet. But yeah, I'm like 6 missions in as they're starting to let some of the hooks off of you so you can kind of do things as you want. I don't have the core stuff unlocked just yet where you can... where you basically get currency every turn to spawn your own units. I don't have that just yet, but I'm pretty sure that's going to be opening up pretty soon. But yeah, you do missions. They do have some new features where you can hold down the triggers to make the battle animations go faster. But it also has in the pause menu the ability to kind of fine tune that stuff to be... not fine-tune it too much. They got like 3 other options of like turn off all the animations, turn off just the capture animations, turn off enemy battle animations, or you know, just have like those are the ones there of just your battle animations, all battle animations, or all animations, I think, essentially, or none. That's all the options they have. They have music as well. You can turn off the music. That's it. So typical Nintendo release where there's hardly any options, especially accessibility options. But I'm curious what that casual difficulty is. Not enough to play it. They have, I think you can switch to that at any point. So if it gets tougher, you can drop down. I don't know if that can, it's, you know, there's any negative to that. But yeah, everything works pretty well. The multiplayer stuff is typical Nintendo, where you can do local multiplayer, local sharing of maps. Everybody has to have a copy of the game, so, you know, no going easy on people. Like maybe the GBA versions may have had it in the back in the day. You could probably link up without having copies for both people. I'm not 100% sure on that, but online play only works with people on your friends list. Yeah. This game seems to have advanced tech to tell you, like, there's nobody in friends list with this game or that's played it yet, so fuck off, basically, is what it does. So, yeah, I didn't try any of that, but after every mission, you get coins out of it. They rank you, your stats by, I think it's strength, your speed, and your tactics up to 100, and gives you, you know, that amount of coins. To that, and you get to spend that on extra maps to play in multiplayer or on the CPU maps, as well as some extra COs you can use in that stuff, as well as like what they call collectibles, which is just music tracks and gallery arts, which they make it sound like, oh, you're going to get some different images of these people, and no, it's the one image of them being introduced with their name on it and their like power. That's the one image you get of each character. So it's like, well, I guess it's better than nothing, but it's for what the what this is, a collection of two classic games that are beloved. I would have liked some concept art and such to go with it. But maybe if you play through it longer, you unlock more of that stuff, but I wouldn't hold out on that. And the what else? The you can jump right into the second game if you want. It gives you warnings like, oh, this is going to spoil stuff about the first game's plot. And it's like, the plot isn't really all that important in these games. But maybe some people are. But if you're weird and you want to do that, you can. I don't think it's going to erase your save for the first game. I think it keeps one save for the first game's campaign and one for the second. So you can pop out whenever and come back later. So that's that. It's $60. I think it's a pretty good value for that because it's a game that you can play a lot of for the campaign stuff, at least. Multiplayer, obviously, is pretty limited, but that's Nintendo. So that collection's pretty solid. I'm going to bet we never see a collection of the DS games. I'm going to say this is as far as they go on this stuff, despite, you know, those two other games also needing to be done up in this way. Because those games were not particularly published a lot. They didn't print out a lot of copies of those games.
Yeah.
I would say those are pretty hard to get even the shortly after launch.
Yep.
And especially that fourth game, the one where they went dark a bit. So that's a thing that, you know, I wish they would hopefully do at some point, but I'm not going to hold my breath on that, especially how long this got delayed.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's Advanced Wars 1 and 2, Reboot Camp. There's also Renfield, Bring Your Own Blood, I think is the full title for that. That is the kind of a movie tie-in game for the new Nicolas Cage movie, where he plays as Dracula. Though it mostly focuses on Renfield, played by Nicholas Holt, who is sort of, you know, his servant who is bringing him, you know, fresh blood in the form of people to feast on and all that. So they made a game based on it. That is obviously the idea is to make a Vampire Survivors clone, which is kind of a wild concept, especially for a movie tie-in game. So it's $5 on PC. It's not on any other consoles at the moment. It's in early access, so they're still adding stuff. They literally, I think, the one of the most recent updates added controller support. So that's how early they are on this. But I've been enjoying it. It's pretty... it's a little bit different than Vampire Survivors in that you start off with one character, Renfield, and I think you unlock more as you progress into the game. And he has like a basic, you know, slash attack that projects out like, you know, a good bit ahead of him. So like character enemies that are like right in front of you don't get attacked by it. But yeah, you're kind of going through. There's three levels. One of them is set in like the St. Louis Cemetery in New Orleans. And you basically like do one area, fight a bunch of enemies that spawn in. And once you've killed all of them, you can, it's like a Smash TV style. It's like, oh, pick a, you know, exit out to one of the other areas here. And you kind of keep doing that until you get to a map where there's like a victim hanging around. Has run around the map. Once you beat all the enemies, you pick them up. And you can go out to one of two exits, one that sacrifices them, one that saves them. And they have, you know, bonuses for that. It's like, I think sacrificing them will potentially get you to the boss earlier versus saving them will delay you a bit on that. So that might allow you to, you know, get more XP and, you know, upgrades and such to be more powerful. Which seems like probably the way to go, because I've gotten to the boss a few times and have not gotten much damage, because there's the boss and there's all the other enemies that just keep spawning. And the boss kind of does bullet hell, you know, style attacks, just shooting out a bunch of bullets in sort of a swirling pattern that are hard to get between to get close up because, you know, your character... is fairly large on the screen. So, but yeah, the other weird thing is they don't have cloud support on Steam. So I've been playing on my Steam Deck and decided to play on Steam, my PC, to see, like, play some more on there, and had to start over essentially. Luckily, I was only playing like 20 minutes or so, a few runs. So that wasn't too big of a deal, but there was a little bit of a surprise there. For one of these games. So, yeah, this seems neat. It's an early access, so no real reason to jump in unless you just want to try another one of these that are new.
Yeah.
So that's one to keep an eye on. Then I've been playing more Dredge. I've been working my way around the map. Kind of got to a point where I'm kind of not sure what I'm going to do about this one area, so I decided to just explore around the other areas to see what was going on. And... I'm on the last tier of upgrades for my ship. So that's been good to see. But yeah, still running into a lot of characters, getting a lot of quests for things. I'm running into a lot of weird characters on islands. They're like, bring me this fish. And I'm like, okay, that's, I'll have to figure out where that's at kind of thing. But yeah, I got to one where these cultists are at that I'm like, oh, this seems like probably going to be the final area of the game. Because they were talking about getting me to do some shit to bring about, you know, the end of the world kind of thing in a very Cthulhu kind of fashion. So, yeah, been enjoying that some more. And let's see here, Power Wash Simulator. I have finished up on PC the round of new maps. The last one is... how to describe it? It's like it's almost like a water plant of sorts, but the person that's doling out the story there is like, that's definitely not what this is. It's like some maybe solar generation plant and using like water tanks as well in that process. I don't know. It's weird, but yeah, they call it a solar water plant, which. Was pretty fun to do because it's a bunch of pipes and big tanks and such, that as well as some solar cell, you know, stuff hanging around the desert. So that's been pretty much it for that. And the last one, I jumped back into Pinball FX. This came out about a month or so ago and did not launch very well, mostly in the sense that so for this game, they are making it a bit more of a a live service game, I guess. So they are having lots more focus on tournaments and events and season passes type stuff to this. And if you own tables from FX3, they do not transfer over ownership, so you don't get them for free, which is disappointing. I don't expect them to, you know, offer up those tables for free for, you know, the rest of time, but a good discount, at least for the early parts of the game's life, would have been nice. Steam, they have a weird get around for that, where I think if you go onto the Steam page for Pinball FX, and if you own tables for stuff that was in FX3, they sell a bundle that includes both versions, FX3 and FX versions of those tables. I'm not 100% sure how to access it. I think you have to access it through the game itself, not in Steam. It's a little weird the way they do all this. There you can essentially jump in, and with the way that they do bundles on Steam, where if you own part of the items, some of the items that are in a bundle, it might even prorate a better discount than what you might have gotten otherwise. And so you can get discounts on those tables, sort of loyalty discounts through that way. It's a little bit weird. On the console versions, they had sales already, I think, in the big spring sale that ended already. For at least PlayStation, I don't know about Xbox or Switch. So they're putting some of that stuff on sale already, while adding a bunch of new tables. Like they have a Crypt of the NecroDancer table, World War Z. What else have they added? There's like a Peanuts table. There's like a bunch of DreamWorks tables in there. Garfield table, My Little Pony. You know, all a bunch of weird. They have a a Gearbox pack. It's like Homeworld, Borderlands, and Brothers in Arms tables. It's also weird. So they're getting a bunch of new licensing stuff in here.
Yeah.
For some of the original tables or licensed tables, that kind of stuff. So that's neat. And yeah, the thing they do, I think, when you start this, they give you the Pinball Pass, which is sort of their subscription version of the service that gets you most of the tables unlocked. For doing it, but it's like $15 a month or $100 for a year, which is like, I don't think I care about it that much to spend that on a monthly or yearly basis, but I'd buy some tables when they're on sale kind of thing. But yeah, that is Pinball FX. It's all right, but yeah, a bit of a rough launch for something that people have a lot of high expectations for, considering the last few versions have been very good. But this feels like just making a new thing, just to have a new thing. So that's been pretty much it for me. So how about you, Brandon?
Well, as for me, I did finish the main campaign for Immortals Phoenix Rising. So I've been, you know, doing some of the DLC related to that. Which includes the two ones I've been done are A New God, which is essentially a series of like challenges that are meant so like Phoenix can ascend to full godhood in the Olympian pantheon. It's actually a lot more difficult than the challenges you get in the base game. By a considerable margin, because they require a lot more like on the nose precision, and there's a lot more like ways that you can really screw things up if you're not careful. It's okay. So I've also been playing the other, which is called The Lost Gods, which is like, so if you play Immortals Phoenix Rising, you know, the five gods you come in contact with, you know, it's Zeus, Aphrodite, Hephaestus, Ares, and Athena. And a bunch of the other gods are like mentioned in passing. And in this DLC, you find out, okay, what happened to the other gods? Why are they not there with the others? And as you find out, well, they got tired of Zeus's shit and decided to piss off and find and, you know, create their own place. Poseidon literally creates an archipelago out of the ground, out of nowhere, in the middle of the sea, and then he basically creates their own islands where they can all sort of rule over their particular worshippers. As you can imagine, because these are like gods, like, you know, like I mentioned, Poseidon, but also Hades and Hestia and, you know, Demeter, all of who, you know, are like major deities involved with things like, you know, fire and the sea and the, you know, weather and the cycle of life and death. As you can imagine, their absence is causing some serious problems. So what happens is Phoenix, who is essentially locked out, she's basically under a lockdown in Olympus because Zeus is trying to do things his own way. Her and Athena, well, I say her. I'm not sure if Phoenix is canonically one gender or the other, but I played a female Phoenix. They decide they'll get a champion. And in this case, the champion is a girl named Ash, who is like a temple, not really a priestess. She's like an orphan that was raised by the temple and just works there. And she ends up becoming their champion. And the game basically plays like Diablo with platforming. That's about the best way I can describe it. Other than that, I've also been playing, I got to play Kena Bridge of Spirits, finally, because I was finally able to get a hold of it since, you know, it's free on PlayStation Plus right now. And, totally get the hype. It is a gorgeous looking game and a very fun and entertaining one too. I will admit it's like, story isn't terribly complicated, but it doesn't really need it to. It has really good environmental storytelling on its own. But the other one I've also been playing is another game that was put on PlayStation Plus, which is Paradise Killer, which is essentially kind of like Danganronpa, except it's a lot more high concept than Danganronpa is. Basically, it's really hard to describe, but basically Paradise Killer revolves around a group of immortals who've created their own little pocket reality who are essentially trying to communicate with these like weird sort of outer dimensional alien beings. They got names like the Silent Goat and others that are... And, you know, they're basically like, it's essentially like this enormous immortal death cult, basically. And they have to like kidnap random people and have them like live in the, what they call the islands, because they're trying to construct the islands in such a way so that they can get enough power to finally communicate with the outer gods themselves. The problem is they've keep screwing it up, and because of that, in order to make a new island, they basically have to kill every single person other than the immortals on the island to construct a new one. Except this time, which is the 24th, on the eve that they're getting ready to, you know, delete this new island and start the new one, somebody manages to kill the entire council that is basically the governing body of the island. And now you, who are a character named Lady Love Dies, whose whole sort of thing is they were the detective of the group who were exiled for something or other, has to come back and now has to figure out who is responsible, who is the guilty party for killing the council. And let's just say out right off the bat, it is just eaten up with vaporwave aesthetic, like just a lot of it. The music is very vaporwave. The art style has a strong vaporwave to it. And the characters themselves, it's like, wow, I have never met a bigger bunch of people of affably evil human beings I have ever encountered. Because you really come to realize, yeah, this is legitimately like a death cult that is specifically made to try and, you know, it's bizarre, is what I'm going to say. It's a damn good detective game, but it is bizarre. And it's some of its concepts are actually kind of hard to get your head around at first, because, like I said, it is very high concept when it comes to a lot of these ideas. And there's a lot of like lore and stuff that's hinted at, but never really fully described. Yeah, that's what I've been playing. So what about you, Danrib?
So the reason why I was out last week was because I went to Super Nintendo World for about a day. So I'll go ahead and talk about that experience for a little bit. Those of you unaware, Super Nintendo World is now open in Universal Studios Hollywood in California.
Yep.
They'll be opening one in Orlando. I believe that's next year or the year after. But yeah, this one is a little bit smaller than the one in Osaka, in Universal Osaka. Like the one in Universal Osaka is big enough where it has a couple more food stands and a Yoshi's Adventure ride that's really tailored for kids. Whereas the one in Universal Hollywood doesn't have that. So the main two attractions are going to be the Toadstool Cafe and then Mario Kart Bowser's Challenge, which is an AR kind of ride. So, yeah, being that the park only opened 2 months ago and it was in the middle of spring break, it was pretty popular. So, you know, lines everywhere. But, you know, I'm a Comic-Con guy, so I'm kind of used to that. The thing is, my girlfriend isn't very fond of waking up early for anything except for work. So when I told her that, you know, we wouldn't be able to do a lot of this stuff unless she woke up early. She, you know, did a lot of things that I wasn't very fond of. But eventually, like, we agreed to just go there at opening. The thing is, though, they do offer sort of a VIP pass for an extra $20 so you have an hour or an extra hour before it opens to yourselves. And a lot of people do that and they eventually sell out. But we weren't able to do that because, getting to the park at 7 a.m. when it opens at 8 a.m. Is hard already. So, yeah, we got there at 8 a.m. And then the main thing is that Super Nintendo World is actually located in the lower lot. So those who haven't been there before, Universal Studios is pretty much separated by two lots. And the only way to get there is through four flights of escalators. So you do that. And then from above, you can see Super Nintendo World. It looks really cool. And then from there, we had to stand in another line that took about 20 minutes to get in. So I probably got into the main part of the park at around 8:30 a.m. And the main thing is that in order to get into Toadstool Cafe, you have to make a reservation once you're in the park. And the only way to do that is to scan a QR code. So I scanned the QR code and we get reservations for 8:30 p.m., 12 hours after we're already there at the park. So that was a little bit of a mess, but it's okay. We ended up going anyway. And then, you know, once you actually get to the park, there are a whole bunch of activities you can do. You have these key challenges, which, you know, you play some sort of mini game and then you earn a key. There's four of those in the park. If you earn three keys, you can take part in a game for Baby Bowser. So anyway, we do some of those. The first one requires you to touch a whole bunch of panels and try to match the colors. And you have three tries to do that. And then you go ahead and get your key. I should also note that the games are pretty useless unless you have what's called the Nintendo Power Band. Those are the little like wristwatches you see people in the YouTube videos play with. And those are around $40 a piece. So, you know, that's already on top of the fee it takes to, or the ticket fee. But they're pretty nifty. They're pretty much one of those slap wrist things. So they aren't like the Disney Magic Bands where they're actually clasps. You can actually just slap them together. And it's good and bad because, you know, one, they should fit in your wrist. But the bad thing is if you do a lot of strenuous activity, they will fall off. Two out of the three games I played had my wrist thing fall off. So that was unfortunate. But they're pretty durable and they're pretty cool to wear. The second thing we did was this crank where we go ahead and crank it. And the object of the game is to have the Goomba fall off of the moving platform. And you do that, you get a key. And then the last one was this other one where we have to make sure that the piranha doesn't wake up. And there are all these alarm clocks around the area. And you have to go ahead and hit the alarm clock so that, you know, they don't go off in front of the piranha. And you go ahead and get your key that way. So we got those three keys. And then we got into the Baby Bowser mini game, and it's pretty cool. Like you walk through the line and see all sorts of different kinds of Baby Bowser art, and then you play another shadow based AI mini game where you stand in front of the screen and you just wave your arms and like you hit bombs, you hit power blocks, you avoid bullet bills, and at the end, if you win, you get a golden mushroom. Yeah, so all of these are pretty cool. Had a pretty fun time doing them. The main issue is that if you're there early, especially with how busy it is right now, there are going to be lines for every single one of those activities. You can also track your status using the Universal Studios app, where it pretty much compares you to other people around the park, and you can do things like win coins and other stickers and stuff like that. And a lot of the stickers actually require you to come back to the park, so that would be like the main reason to, you know, go back with a season pass if you have one. But you know, a lot of people are on vacation, no one's gonna be a completionist and get everything unless like they actually live in the area. So there's that. Moving on to the Mario Kart ride, this was a really fun one. The wait times throughout the day were typically at around like an hour to 3 hours. Me and my girlfriend stood in line at around 150 minutes. And yeah, it was a long time in line, but I don't think we actually reached 150 minutes. I would say it was probably about 75 minutes, so pretty much half. And like as you go through the line, you go through Yoshi's Island. It's really nicely designed. And then you end up back outside, and then you all of a sudden go inside Bowser's castle, which of course looks like him. There's a big Bowser in front of the entrance where you can go ahead and take photos. And there's plenty of room to do so. So you don't really have to worry about too many people like getting in your way. Like they're all there to experience the thing like you are. Mm-hmm. And then eventually you get to the actual ride. And then the ride can fit 4 people. And you can go ahead and scan your band there. And the main thing that they give you is like a hat and goggles. You know, that the hat is shaped like Mario's, and the goggles just go ahead and snap onto the hat. And the ride is actually a slow one. So think of like those Disneyland kiddie rides, but because you're wearing the goggles, you see all these, you know, Mario characters there. And then the whole thing is Mario, Team Mario versus Team Bowser. And whenever you see anybody on the opposing team, you have to look at them and then press the buttons in order to shoot them all. And it sort of has that Mario Kart feel by like, you know, everything is on rails, but eventually the game will tell you to turn right, turn left, and that's when you actually turn the steering wheel. But you know, the fun part is forgetting that turning the steering wheel has nothing to do with the characters you're shooting, because you actually have to be looking at them. So the goggles actually track your eyes and like where you're facing and where you're going, and you go ahead and shoot that way. And a lot of the achievements you can unlock are about making sure that you're shooting the enemies and not your friends and things of that nature. And then at the end of the ride, you're given a score compared to everybody else in the cart. And those are your bragging rights for the day. So yeah, that was pretty cool. I was hoping to ride it again, but of course we got tired. We went back to the hotel, eventually went back to the park. And when we went back to the park, there was no more wait in order to get to Super Nintendo World. So for those of you in the area wondering about when you should go, you should definitely go out at night, just because one, it looks a whole lot different. And then two, like all of the weights are cut in half almost. We end up going to Toastal Cafe, and then I ordered the Mario Burger, the Question Black Tiramisu, the Beanpole Cake, and Toad Short Rib. And then my girlfriend had the Fire Flower Spaghetti and the Caprese Salad. Everything was pretty good. My favorite thing, believe it or not, was the burger and fries, especially the fries, because the fries are cooked in truffle oil. And it's a little pricey at $17 for the burger and fries, but you know, it's theme park. That's typically what you get. But it wasn't a bad burger either. And again, like these fries were some of the best fries I've had in a long time. And it was a pretty cool experience. Got a bunch of swag, got a hoodie. I also got this Power Star popcorn bucket that also lights up. So yeah, pretty fun time. Obviously, it's busy now, but you know, as it dies down, it's definitely something I'd recommend. But anyway, as far as what I've been playing, I got a start on Metroid Prime Remastered. I played it for about an hour, and it's very much Metroid Prime, and that's a good thing. Like if you've played Metroid Prime, you know how good it is. If you haven't played Metroid Prime, oh, you're in for a treat. And
oh yeah.
I felt the exact same way then than I did, you know, the 20 years ago where it came out, just because like the game looks that good. And I also felt like I had to relearn things because, yeah, your lock-on stuff is still there. But some of the controls have been remapped in such a way where, like, for example, when you get a new gun in the old game, you could use the right stick to go ahead and choose it. Whereas with this one, it was a little bit different. But the cool thing is a lot of the controls are actually customizable. So you can go ahead and play to your strengths there. But for the most part, it definitely felt like a modern shooter. The right stick still, or the right stick now, allows you to change your point of view, so it definitely makes things a whole lot more bearable. Mm. As far as the consoles go, I've jumped back into Jedi Fallen Order. I won't go into detail about it just because, like, you know, I work for that company, but it's a game where I stopped playing maybe 2 weeks after it first came out for whatever reason. So I started over, and yeah, I'm playing on easy. So, like, the goal here is to, you know, finish it before Jedi Survivor comes out. Don't know if that'll happen, but anyway, I'm enjoying it now. I also got a review code for Coffee Talk Episode 2, but I've never played the original one. So luckily, the original one was available on Xbox Game Pass, and I go ahead and tried that out. And the main thing is that it's a whole bunch of, like, cool pixel art reminiscent of Phoenix Wright. But the main thing is that you're a barista in Seattle, or a modern day fantastical Seattle where everybody you serve is, like, some sort of, like, monster or whatever. But for the most part, they imply that racism is gone. But there are a lot of, like, issues that each of these clients have regarding racism. So it's interesting hearing all their stories. So aside from hearing all their stories, you're also just making coffee. So, you know, you start off with one of the characters named Freya, who is a journalist, and all she wants is espresso. And to make an espresso, you just make coffee, brew it up, and that's an espresso. So a lot of the gameplay value here is really just messing around with the recipes and then going ahead and figuring them out. So it's a lot of trial and error. You're allowed to make up to 5 mistakes per day, and it's pretty cool there. The first game was about 14 days long. Should take you no less than 4 hours to complete, and I did that, and that's why I'm playing Episode 2 now. And Episode 2 is more or less the same kind of game, except they've added more ingredients. It's called Episode 2 Hibiscus and Butterfly, and it's funny because the two ingredients they added were hibiscus and butterfly tea leaves. So you can make blue drinks and stuff now. So yeah, it's a pretty good time. I'm enjoying it, and I hope to have a review on this game sometime before the week is over. And that's it for me.
All right, so let's get to our news here. We got two stories here for games you get as part of subscription services. First up, Game Pass. They've announced, like, the next week or so of releases that they have here. As I mentioned, Minecraft Legends here. Danny will talk about Coffee Talk Episode 2, Hibiscus and Butterfly. Those are available now. Also available is Medieval Dynasty for the Xbox One. I think it's already available for PC and Xbox Series X and S, so it's the older version. There's Homestead Arcana for PC and Xbox Series X and S. I played a little bit of that. I don't think I saw anything that was early access, but it definitely felt like it. A little rough around the edges, but it's one of those farming adventure games, you know. Stardew Valley-esque, but it's 3D. The whole thing is that this miasma has corrupted a large part of the world, and you're kind of a new witch that is going around and starting your process of, you know, learning all your powers and all that. So trying to heal the land and all that. So I played like 30 minutes of it on PC. That seemed a little rough around the edges, and tried to launch it on my Xbox, continue the save, and it just was stuck on the loading screen for like 2 minutes, so I closed it and gave up on that. So there's that. For the week ahead, there's Cassette Beast for PC. This is a Pokemon-style game. Yeah, April 26th. Let's see. Yeah, you collect these awesome monsters as cassettes, like music cassettes, and during turn-based battles, you fight other beasts, but it has a whole thing for combining them together for unique combinations that kind of stuff. So that looks neat. April 27th, there's Blaze Blue Cross Tag Battle Special Edition, console and PC. So that's the big crossover new game. There's Blaze Blue, Persona 4 Arena, Under Night, Inbirth, and Ruby stuff in there, as well as maybe some others. So that's when you can check out April 27th, as well as The Last Case of Benedict Fox, console and PC. That is a maybe Cthulhu-esque Metroid-like kind of thing. I played the demo on the Steam for that. That seemed pretty neat. Though could be the demo's a little clumsy as well with the combat and platforming stuff, so maybe that's better. Now, it's fully going to be out here pretty soon. And the other game is Redfall, May 2nd. So that'll be the Tuesday after next. So we'll get to see how that is. The game just seems like it has a bit of a rough launch there without the quality mode, or it is only available in quality mode with no 60 FPS option on console. On Xbox Series X and S, PC, I assume you can brute force that if you need to. It's based on how good your PC is for that. So curious to see how that is, but also I'm not into vampire games that, at least this kind of vampire game. Castlevania stuff and, you know, Vampire Survivors kind of stuff is perfectly fine for me. I don't know that I need like a potentially scary, like, first-person shooter thing. I don't know, but that's one a lot of people are excited for, so we'll see how that one turns out here. Let's see, what else do they have here? That's it for the games. I'm just trying to see what else they have here. Not really too much. They have some other stuff leaving pretty soon. Bugsnax, Dragon Quest Builders 2, Tetris Effect Connected. So, handful of games to check out if you have not done so before. So, there you go. And the other subscription service that got stuff, Nintendo Switch Online Plus Expansion Pack, got some new Genesis games. Four of them, in fact. There's Flicky, the console port of a big arcade game of sorts.
That was one of Sega's, like, as far like that was to Sega what Donkey Kong was to Nintendo, basically. It was this massive hit. And you know, you see,
I don't know what the hell Flicky is. I was a Rystar guy, but I have no idea what Flicky is.
Flicky is basically this game where you're like a little blue bird who's trying to it's been a while. I think you're trying to collect like your other birds and then try to keep them away from like this cat that's chasing you.
It's kind of like Mappy, Namco's Mappy. Also a little bit like Super Mario Brothers or Mario Brothers in terms of having these sort of platforms you're running around and hoping to avoid enemies or take out the ones you can. How it works, here's your bunch of birds collecting your chicks and trying to avoid the cat that's chasing you.
Yeah, and Flickies are like still a thing in for Sega. I mean, they got kind of absorbed into the Sonic canon, but yeah.
So that's the Genesis version for that. I guess the last version they ported it to directly versus just re-releases on other places. So there's that. There's Pulse Man, which is an old Game Freak game.
That's a early Game Freak joint. One of their first like big successes. And it's like a really, really solid Genesis action game.
Yeah, I've never heard of it, so
it's good. You should try it.
I don't have expansion the expansion pack, so I don't really need it right now anyway.
Well then use a ROM hack. I mean
But there's that. Let's see, there's Kid Chameleon.
Yep.
Which is Kid Chameleon.
Yeah, it's Kid Chameleon.
It's been a bunch of their other collections, so it's not really an unknown thing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you played that before, it's just like any of those other versions.
There is one thing I know. I know. I do want to try Pulseman, though, so I'll try that out sometimes.
Yeah. If I could compare Pulseman to anything, it's like a sort of like, it kind of plays like an off-brand treasure game, more or less.
Yeah. That certainly would make sense for the Genesis.
Yeah.
But the last game is Street Fighter Dash, I think, is the way they do that. Special Champion Edition.
Yeah.
Which was another version of Street Fighter 2 on the Genesis.
Of the, like, six or seven that exist.
Yeah. That has more stuff in it. As they mentioned here, mirror matches, new moves, the option to play in either champion or hyper modes, 11 speed settings, a group battle mode, and has M. Bison, Balrog, Vega, and Sagat as selectable fighters. So, yeah, more Street Fighter 2.
Yep.
More interesting for the novelty of having yet another version of Street Fighter 2 on the Switch, because there's a two Street Fighter collections on there.
Yep.
One that's much better than the other one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, more ways to play that, but a version that you probably don't get access to very often.
Yeah.
For that. But yeah, all those are out now, so you can check those out.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Street Fighter.
They had a big showcase on April 20th or 20. Mm. Announcing a bunch of stuff there for details like the first four characters, DLC characters they're going to release over the course of the next year, which is a pretty wide release slate for that, but okay. They seem to have an idea that this game's going to do a lot better than Street Fighter V out of the gate. So they seem like they're staggering things in a way that makes sense for them to stretch this out as long as possible.
Yeah, I really need to download this tonight because...
Yeah, they have a demo that's out now. It'll be on Xbox Series X and S and PC April 26th in a few days. It's PS4 and PS5 right now.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like it's a pretty thin slice of the game because it's, I think, Ken and the new guy. I forget what his name is at this point.
Don't care. Just want to play it.
Yeah, it was... The last DLC person for Street Fighter V and then made them the face of Street Fighter VI. I forget what his name is, but you have that. You can play a little bit of the World Tour mode, which is sort of the weird little open world thing. Mm-hmm. And some local play stuff. And you can create a custom avatar that can be transferred into the main game once it launches, so you can make your weird freak character if you want.
Yeah, if that's what you want to do.
Yeah. That game will be out June 2nd, so a little over a month or so away.
Yeah, I've really been loving what they tour mode's going to be like, because they're basically making it out to be like a wacky sort of version of Yakuza, but with Street Fighter, and I'm like, hey, I'm all in for that.
Yeah, I don't know that it's going to be as good as like that.
I mean, I doubt it's going to be as expansive as Yakuza, but...
It's probably going to be on par with, like, a lot of the Tekken side modes.
Yeah.
Which is, like, it's better than nothing, but it's not, like, the thing you're coming to the game for.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, let's see. The four characters they announced that will be available during the first year. There's Rashid, which I think is from 4. There's AKI, an all-new character. They'll be out in the fall. Yeah, Rashid's in the summer. Ed, who debuted in 4 but was first playable in 5, is early 2024. And then Akuma will be returning to Street Fighter in next spring, so about a year away. They'll also be in World Tour in some aspects of it, so you'll at least be able to see them in the game. And that's largely what that showcase had in it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there you go. Demo you can check out now. Let's see. We got our first upcoming release here. Jupiter Corporation decided to take a shit on the Star Wars game coming out and announced that Picross S9 is coming out April 27th. For people that have a Switch and not, you know, the new consoles, they can play the newest Picross game for $10, which will be me. That seems to, yeah, just has a bunch of new puzzles, 300 new puzzles. I guess if you've played Picross S4, S5, and S6, you'll unlock extra puzzles for having played each of those, which I have. So those are like 40 by 40 puzzles that are ridiculous. Let's see. Yeah, new feature they announced is Rewind Puzzle. I don't know what that's. I guess it's a hint. Say it's a handy feature for when you notice inconsistencies while you're solving a puzzle, which I guess a way to rewind back instead of trying to figure out, like, wait, what did I fuck up here? Because that can happen sometimes. You get towards the end and you're like, I fucked up one thing. Now I have to figure out where that one thing is that fucks up the rest of the puzzle. But yeah, there you go. That's a good release. I'll be getting that as well. It's probably Star Wars Jedi Survivor. Let's see. Diablo 4. Activision Blizzard needs more testing of their servers, I guess, as they announced a server slam weekend to have more opportunities for people to play it from May 12th to May 14th. Countering the weekend that The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom comes out. Obviously, the entire reason they're doing this. They seem to still have no save data from the last open beta will carry over. So you'll have to start over again, play through the prologue in Act 1 again. They have some stuff to unlock here, and maybe the same ones that were from the previous round of beta stuff. It's like a title, a couple titles, a cosmetic thing. New reward, a mount trophy, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think you can ride horses at times, and I guess sort of Witcher style, you can have like trophies hanging off of them, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, you can play some more Diablo 4 in a couple of weeks here for that. And next up here, Humanity finally has a release date. Game from Enhance Studios that's been in the works for several years now. They finally have a date of May 16th. And along with that, they have announced that it'll also be on PlayStation Plus Extra at launch. So people on PS5 and PS4 with PS Plus Extra can check it out for no additional cost, as well as people with PSVR, PSVR2, as well, it has support for that stuff. So people will be able to check that weird ass game out. That is cool to see. A very smart move, I think, for this kind of game. So I'm curious to see more of this and check it out next month. Let's get to some acquisitions and job news here. We talked about Joseph Staten leaving Microsoft a couple weeks ago, and now we know what his new thing is. And it is being hired as creative director on an unannounced Netflix games project. He describes it as a brand new AAA multi-platform game and original IP. So that's a weird thing for Netflix to be doing. Some sort of big budget console experience, but Joseph Staten seems like the sort of guy you would want to lead that project with all the work he's done at 343 and Bungie, making a bunch of cool stuff. So Netflix seems like they are putting a lot of work into their game stuff, which is doing pretty well. They've got a lot of cool stuff on there, at least on the mobile side. I'd be curious to see like what this ends up being, but it seems like it's pretty early still. So it'll probably be at least a few more years before we find out what it is, but that's cool. Mm. One of the few like tech companies investing in games that's not a complete shit show. on like Facebook or Amazon or anything like that. So there you go. The rest here, we have acquisitions. PlayStation announced that they have acquired Firewalk Studios. This is the studio that they announced that they were partnering with back in 2021 on a new game, multiplayer IP. And it seems like that must have been going so well that they are purchasing the studio outright from, I guess, this company called Probably Monsters, I guess, technically owned the studio, so they're purchasing it from them. But yeah, this team is full of former, I think, Bungie and yeah, Call of Duty studios and stuff like that. So a lot of interesting talent there for another multiplayer game for PlayStation. So that's an interesting acquisition. Seems to be sort of showing their confidence in that game that they're working on. So that's cool to see. Next up here is maybe the weirdest acquisition. Sega has acquired Rovio Entertainment, the Angry Bird publisher, maker and all that. The mobile game studio that weirdly only had one hit, Angry Birds, and has tried to make a bunch of spin-offs and sequels and such that I don't think it has done as well as that first game.
Varying degrees of success,
Yeah, but not the hit that Angry Birds was back in the day.
Angry Birds was a friggin' cultural phenomenon.
Yeah, it was one of those first big mobile games when people were like, oh, I guess we can make games for this, huh?
Yeah.
What kind of things can we do to make a big game? And Angry Birds was one of the first big ones.
Yeah, and then Candy Crush came along and buried it.
Yeah, and they're paying $775 million for this, which is a lot for a studio that largely only has one hit to it. That was 15 years ago, about.
Yeah, it's a strange move. I mean, like I wouldn't go as far as saying Candy Crush buried it, but I the one thing that I give Angry Birds credit for is moving people from like the Facebook platform. It made people take it a little bit seriously there. And then, you know, it launched another casual audience there up front, and Angry Birds was huge. Like, there was a point where there was more Angry Birds merch in GameStop than, like, you know, Mario. Mario's king again, but just goes to show that, you know, life comes fast. And, you know, like you guys said, like, Rovio really only had Angry Birds to its name. Granted, it was huge. Like, that, it launched merch. It launched a very bad movie. But, yeah, Sega can say that they went ahead and acquired this for their mobile expertise. Angry Birds or Rovio hasn't ran. I'm not sure Sega even really needs it. If anything, like, this helps Rovio. Like, you know, a lot of their people can still, you know, coexist in some way. But with an acquisition like this, like, a lot of the overhead also leaves. Like, you're not going to have two PR departments, anything like that. So that'll be interesting to see. But yeah, this is just another example of continuing to. I'm just not really sure about this move or who it really helps, but it's interesting to see. Maybe we'll see the Angry Birds be saved by Sonic in a future game or something. It's just weird.
Yeah, I could definitely see like a Sonic and Angry Birds crossover game on mobile at some point.
Definitely.
They do kind of fit stylistically with a lot of Sega's, you know, Sonic games and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's a weird acquisition. So Sega probably has some sort of plan for them.
Yeah.
So yeah, there you go. The other acquisition of note comes from Epic Games, who acquired the studio Aquarius. I don't know. The studio that made the Horizon Chase games, Horizon Chase Turbo and Horizon Chase 2, as well as some other stuff. They seem to be saying that they are acquiring them to create groundbreaking content and social experiences within Fortnite, which is disappointing for a studio that's made some really cool arcade racing games. And they are going to essentially be forming Epic Games Brazil. So I hope this isn't like the end of them making their own games, because I think Horizon Chase 2 is still in the works to come to consoles. Mm-hmm. I think they've released mobile first, so I hope that they're not just buying them to be a support studio when they could be another great sort of developer in their arsenal for making unique stuff as well.
Mm.
So, yeah, we'll have to see on that one. But yeah, that's the end of the acquisitions. We have another Nintendo story here before we get to the Indie World thing. If you remember Gary Bowser, the hacker that got caught doing a lot of the Switch hacking stuff, was part of a group there, was the one that got busted and sentenced to 40 months in prison. Starting last February 2022, has been released from prison for good behavior, but the downside of this is that Nintendo is still going to get money from him.
Oh, in a way
that just seems maybe cruel at this point, as I think the part of his sentencing requires him to pay them a total of $10 million.
Yeah.
That, as somebody who is, an ex-convict, will obviously have lesser opportunities to get jobs. They will be able to take 25 to 30% of his monthly gross income for the rest of his working life. And so, yeah, that's basically means he has Nintendo as sort of somebody that he has to pay alimony payments to, essentially. And so that is, let's see here. Yeah, he was able to work jobs in prison, was able to essentially pay $25 a month through that for a total of $175 off that $10 million. So that was basically nothing. Kind of a weird wrinkle in this story that he's out, but he's still on the hook for this $10 million. That's kind of just a cruel thing at this point.
Yeah.
Because it's not like that $10 million is integral to Nintendo's business. It just seems like they want to discourage people from, doing what he and his team were doing. And, the cruelty is the point of that.
Yeah.
To make an example of them.
Mm-hmm.
Versus just having him as a sort of a wage slave to them.
Pretty much.
So, yeah, that's your weird Nintendo news of the week.
Yeah.
But let's get to some slightly more positive news here. The Indie World Showcase happened.
Mm-hmm.
I forget which day this was. I think it was Wednesday. That they showed off a bunch of stuff. And no, the Hollow Knight game was not part of this at all.
Mm.
So a lot of people were annoyed. And it's like,
yeah,
you're going to be annoyed every single time.
Yeah, just expect it.
Yeah, but we did get a bunch of news here, and we'll kind of run through this pretty quickly. We have a date for Mineko's Night Market, which seems like one of those adventure sim games of sorts, but that'll be out Switch and PC on September 26th. Mm. PlayStation and Xbox will get it October 26th, so about a month exclusivity there.
Yeah.
So that looks neat. There's My Time at Sandrock, which has been in early access on PC for a bit, I guess, is going to hit 1.0 in the summer at some point. They basically announced that it was going to be on, coming to Switch sometime this summer. The follow-up to My Time at Portia, set in a new, desert town that's survived a post-apocalyptic events of some kind, and you're helping to restore the community to its former glory, that kind of stuff. So there you go for that. Mm. There's Plate Up, which is a cooking roguelite management game of sorts. I think I technically have this on Steam through a Humble Bundle or something. But this is one of those games that's kind of looks like an Overcooked, but it's got more of a roguelike kind of vibe to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're kind of setting up sort of conveyor belts to put your sort of food materials through different processes to turn into food to sell to people and then serving it up to people. So almost a little bit of Overcooked meets Diner Dash a little bit there. So that looks like that could be neat. Yeah, that's been out on Steam since last August. But that'll be out on PS5, Xbox, and Switch in October. No specific date on that. They are doing a Switch version of Quilts and Cats of Calico. This is a popular board game called Calico that is getting a Switch version. I think it's been on Steam for a bit. So that'll be out this fall. So there you go for that. They also mentioned that like there are even cats walking around on the board and such. So they're going all in on the cat stuff there. Next up, Rift of the Necrodancer, which is the Necrodancer team making a new game, but it is rhythm-based and almost kind of rhythm-based in a couple of different ways. It has different sort of modes, but the boss fights are kind of Punch-Out style to it, which is a pretty neat concept there. So that looks like that is coming to Switch and PC sometime later this year. Then they had some a DLC or update segment showcasing some stuff that's getting DLC. There's a little to the left is getting the Cupboards and Drawers DLC. This is paid DLC. It's coming to Switch and PC in June. So that'll be some, I think I say 25 new puzzles for that game. So that's cool. Then Shovel Knight Pocket Dungeon is getting a free update called Puzzler's Pack. It's going to add two new playable characters. They're adding a new Quandary Challenges section of puzzles. And you can also pay Mr. Hat a visit for over 20 in-game hats to modify runs or pick up some new relics in Chester's shop. So that is DLC, I think free DLC. So you can check that out. And then there's Cult of the Lamb. It's getting the Relics of the Old Faith updates. It's a free update coming in, let's see, April 28th. So here in a few days. That's going to add, dozens of new items. Relics and enemies are scattered across remixed dungeons, guarded by new versions of the four guardian bishops. Take your spoils back to the cult with new buildings to construct and followers to recruit, plus a new unlockable quest. And after beating the game, keep the faith going with the new permadeath, gauntlet, and boss rush mode. So that's a very big update there for that. Or maybe that's out the 24th. I guess I might have the date wrong on that. But there you go for that. Let's see. They show off some more games. Animal Wells coming to the Switch alongside PS5 and PC early 2024. So that game's still a ways off, another year, maybe. Then they showed off Crime O'Clock, which is a very weird looking game. This is coming to Switch and PC June 30th. As they mentioned, this is kind of a time traveling puzzle investigation game of sorts. As they say here, prevent crimes before they happen. It's Crime O'Clock. Investigate cases through time and evolving maps by unveiling a multi-eras linked story. We'd be observant enough to solve the mysteries. Crime waits for no man. And so that looks like a pretty neat game. So you're kind of going back to different eras to solve puzzles that affects the other eras and all that kind of stuff. It's a little weird, but that looks neat. So yeah, that's June 30th. Then they talked about Teslagrad 2, as well as Teslagrad Remastered. That is on everything now. There might be bundles as well for that stuff to make it a little bit cheaper. But yeah, those were cool games that were sort of physics puzzle games, 2D physics puzzle games that you're playing through. Yeah, so they remastered the the first game, some enhanced visuals and some extra challenge levels for people who want to play it. So that's cool. Those games were, at least that first game was pretty good. Yeah, then they announced Shadows Over Loathing. That's out on the Switch now. Will be coming to PlayStation later. Physical release this fall of 2023. I will highlight for this game that one of the main devs has had some abuse allegations from a few people that gets looked over a lot whenever people talk about it. So that's something to keep in mind if you are interested in those games. I don't think that has much of a huge coverage of that stuff. So that's disappointing to see Nintendo kind of featuring one of their games again. But let's see here. Next up, Blasphemous 2 is going to be a thing. It's going to launch this summer for PS5, Xbox, Series X and S, Switch and PC. And so that's more of Blasphemous, which if you haven't played that, it's sort of a 2D Souls-like platformer kind of thing, where it is very heavily steeped in like Catholic, Catholic guilt kind of stuff to it. Very dark and moody and all that. So definitely not a game to play if you need a pick me up.
But if you are like, it's that game is basically like essential 2D Souls-like game. Pretty much better than pretty much any other game in that genre. But yeah, it has some plenty dark and dreary imagery. And especially if you, a lot of it is drawn like old medieval and Renaissance era Catholic imagery, especially Spanish Catholic imagery. And it does play that up to the hilt. It is a enjoyable game if you like the challenge, but it is relentlessly dark.
Yep. Yeah. So yeah, that'll be out soon enough. For a little bit of a brighter game, Oxenfree 2, Lost Signals, will be finally releasing July 12th for PS5, PS4, Switch, and PC. That one is from Night School Studio, who is now owned by Netflix. So they're publishing a game on those consoles and PC. So that's a neat little thing. I need to go back and play the first game. I have not done so. That's like a narrative adventure game, basically, with choices and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You called it brighter. This game is not bright at all. It is very dark. A lot of dark stuff in it. The first game I didn't actually finish. I wasn't a fan of the radio stuff, but I don't know. This one looks a whole lot deeper. So I'll give it a try.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll be out July 12th. Let's see. There's Paper Trail, which is a top-down puzzle adventure. Maybe a little bit of a Zelda-esque kind of thing here. But the core conceit is that it's kind of based around like a papercraft kind of world. Mm. So you're kind of folding and joining paths together like they're paper to explore and get around. So you're going to be contorting, spinning, rotating, twisting parts of the world to get around and do that stuff. So I imagine there's probably no combat to that. It's probably more on the puzzle end of it, the whole thing. So, yeah, that looks neat. That'll be out August for Switch and later for PlayStation, Xbox, and PC. Next up here, Little Kitty Big City will be out next year for Switch and PC. So that's been in the works for a while. One of those games about playing as an animal in a big city. And this little kitty who's lost its way in the big city. And so you're kind of able to explore, help other animals, do all kinds of weird stuff. So that looks neat. Yeah, that'll be out next year at some point.
Yeah, it sort of looks like it's trying to be the game Stray. A lot of people thought Stray was going to be.
I mean, this is what I wanted Stray to be. So I'm actually more excited about this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that's going to be a ways off still. Then next up, we have Chants of Sennar. This is, I forget where this, is based on, inspired by the myth of Babel, where men have forgotten their past. It's a puzzle adventure game. This will be on PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC, September 5th. So that looks neat. Has a nice little style to it. Then our next one here, Brotato. This is a game that is fairly popular on Switch. It is a Vampire Survivors-like game. But instead of being, you know, various Castlevania-style characters, you're a bunch of potatoes in sort of the bro force kind of fashion. They're all like bro versions of various characters that are done in like a potato form. This one has more of like a dual stick shooter kind of control to it. So it's one that I haven't really taken to too much when I played it on my Steam Deck and whatnot. So yeah, that's one you can check out. That'll be out sometime later this year on Switch. It's been on PC for a while, so that one's neat. Then they announced Escape Academy, the complete edition for the Switch. So people will be able to get a version of that game with all the DLC included for $30 when it's out later this year. Okay, I thought this came out on the Switch originally, but I guess this is the debut of the game on the Switch. I guess it came out on everything else back in last summer. So, okay, that's neat. Then they also announced that Five Nights at Freddy's Security Breach is also coming to the Switch. Been out on everything else, so that's the big, like, not really open world, but you're able to explore big environments instead of being stuck in one room and trying to keep all the animatronic creatures from finding you. This time it's more of a...
It's more of a stealth game. Or anything else. I just hope that they went back and fixed all the bugs, because that game was buggy as shit when it came out. I mean, I can't count the number of Let's Players I watched play that game who kept falling through the floor.
But yeah, there you go for that. And the last thing they ended with is Bomb Rush Cyberpunk. That is going to be launching on the Switch and PC August 18th. PlayStation and Xbox are going to be at a later date. They're saying they're hoping it's going to be only like 1 or 2 weeks later. But that is the Jet Set Radio style game. At least that's what it looks like. Has been in the works for quite a while. So, yeah, that seems like it's...
I hope it measures up to that game. Jet Set Radio is a really hard game to try and equal as terms of quality. The only game that managed to do it arguably was the sequel. So I hope that game ends up being good.
The original game, but I think it's also a game that's more about its style than its gameplay. I think it doesn't hold up super well for what it is. It's a lot of pretty simple gameplay concepts of just exploring around the world and figuring out what you're supposed to do. And, eventually get points where the cops are just chasing after you and just kind of running around and trying to do your thing before they catch up to you kind of stuff. It's maybe not as good as the concept seemed, but maybe this one will do it right, since Sega really hasn't done much with that series in probably about almost 20 years at this point. I think that third game on the Xbox was, or was that a second game? I forget. Whatever the Xbox game was, that's probably about 20 years old at this point. So, yeah. But yeah, there you go. That's the Nintendo Indie World Showcase. Some A lot of neat stuff there that I'm curious to check out, but not much here that has dates, really.
Yeah, and I think that was part of what like ruined the momentum. As you mentioned, there weren't a whole lot of dates. I don't know. To me, it was flat the whole way through. But that's only because of my interest. I can pretty much there weren't a whole lot of games that captivated. You know, there was actually most of them were part of the sizzle reel, and I guess the most disappointing part was the fact that there was no one more thing. And like Nintendo is the company that made that whole cadence with these events popular. So the fact that they didn't have one, you know, it left a bad taste in my mouth. Like this wasn't a bad presentation by any means, but nothing here was for me, and I just didn't care for a lot of those.
Yeah. There was a lot of stuff here I liked, so I'm pretty happy. I don't really expect anything out of these showcases.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to see some new cool stuff, and definitely got some of that. Though a lot of this stuff wasn't new. A lot of stuff is just like stuff I've heard about for a while. Things that have existed and just got, you know, announced that it was coming to the Switch, or you know, time frames when they'll come to the Switch. A few things came out that day, so yeah, pretty solid showcase for me. As somebody that, unless you know these games are exclusive to the Switch, I'll play them elsewhere. I'm kind of in that point where I only play my Switch for exclusives, like Advance Wars and then Picross and then Tears of the Kingdom. Because indie stuff I can get on my Steam Deck and play, you know, in a better, more stable fashion. So, but yeah, that's been pretty much it for the show this week.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you to Brandon and Danner for joining.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news as we get one more week closer to the release of Tears of the Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
I think we got two more shows to do before it releases, so
yep.
That'll be a whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we'll be back next week with a new slate of news and games to talk about. If you enjoy the show, for let friends and family know, they should check it out. And select strangers that may also be excited for games to play with you. So, yeah, thank you all for tuning in. I hope you have a good week ahead, and we'll see you all next time.